No, actually, I just have bad news. The ship was still intact. Halfborn, Mallory, and Samira looked like they'd paid a heavy price to keep it that way. Halfborn's left arm was in a sling. Mallory's wild red hair had been shorn off at chin level. Sam stood at the rail, dripping wet, wringing out her magic hijab. "Water horses?" I asked. Halfborn shrugged.
"Nothing we couldn't handle. Half a dozen attacks since yesterday afternoon. About what I figured."
"One pulled me into the river by my hair," Mallory complained. Halfborn grinned.
"I think I gave you a pretty good haircut, considering I only had my battle axe to work with. Let me tell you, Magnus, with the blade so close to her neck, I was tempted."
"Shut up, oaf," Mallory growled.
"Exactly my point," said Halfborn. "But Samira now, you should have seen her. She was impressive."
"It was nothing," Sam muttered. Mallory snorted. "Nothing? You got dragged under the river and came up riding a water horse. You mastered that beast. I've never heard of anyone who could do that."
Samira winced slightly. She gave her hijab another twist, as if she wanted to squeeze out the last drops of the experience.
"Valkyries get on well with horses. That's probably all it was."
"Hmm." Halfborn pointed at me. "What about you all? You're alive, I see."
We told him the story of our night in the pottery studio, and our morning destroying King's Square. Mallory frowned at Alex, who was still covered in clay.
"That would explain Fiero's new coat of paint."
"And the rock in TJ's head."
Halfborn leaned closer to inspect the shrapnel. TJ's forehead had stopped bleeding. The swelling was down. But for reasons unknown, the sliver of flint still refused to come out. Whenever I tried to pull it, TJ yelped in pain. Fixed above his eyebrow, the little shard gave him a look of permanent surprise.
"Does it hurt?"
Halfborn asked. "Not anymore," TJ said sheepishly. "Not unless you try to remove it."
"Hold on, then."
With his good hand, Halfborn rummaged through his belt pouch. He pulled out a box of matches, fumbled one free, then struck it against TJ's flint. The match burst into flames immediately.
"Hey," TJ complained. "You have a new superpower, my friend,"
Halfborn grinned.
"That could be useful."
"Right, enough of that," Mallory said. "Glad you all survived. But did you get information from the giant?"
"Yeah," Alex said, cradling the head of Pottery Barn. "Kvasir's meat is in Norway, some place called Flom." The lit match slipped from Halfborn's fingers and landed on the deck. TJ stomped out the flame.
"You all right, big guy? You look like you've seen a draugr."
An earthquake seemed to be happening under Halfborn's whiskers.
"Jorvik was bad enough," he said. "Now Flom? What are the odds?"
"You know the place," I guessed.
"I'm going below," he muttered.
"Want me to heal that arm first?" He shook his head miserably, as if he was quite used to living with pain. Then he made his way down the ladder. TJ turned to Mallory.
"What was that about?"
"Don't look at me," she snapped. "I'm not his keeper."
But there was a twinge of concern in her voice.
"Let's get underway," Samira suggested. "I don't want to be on this river any longer than we have to."
On that, we all agreed. York was pretty. It had good fish and chips and at least one decent pottery studio. But I was ready to get out of there. Alex and TJ went below to change clothes and rest up from their morning of combat. That left Mallory, Sam, and me to man the ship. It took us the rest of the day to navigate our way down the River Ouse and back out to sea. But the voyage was mercifully uneventful.
No water horses stampeded us. No giants challenged us to combat or bingo. The worst thing we encountered was a low bridge, forcing us to fold down the mainmast, which may or may not have collapsed on top of me. At sunset, as we left the coast of England behind, Sam did her ritual washing. She prayed facing southwest, then sat down next to me with a satisfied sigh and unwrapped a package of dates. She passed me one, then took a bite of hers. She closed her eyes as she chewed, her face transformed by pure bliss like the fruit was a religious experience, which I guess it was.
"Every sunset," she said, "the taste of that date is like experiencing the joy of food for the first time. The flavor just explodes in your mouth."
I chewed my date. It was okay. It did not explode or fill me with bliss. Then again, I hadn't worked for it by fasting all day. "Why dates?" I asked. "Why not, like, Twizzlers?"
"Just tradition."
She took another bite and made a contented, "Mmm."
"The Prophet Muhammad always broke fast by eating a few dates."
"But you can have other stuff afterward, right?"
"Oh, yes," she said gravely. "I intend to eat all the food.
I understand Alex brought back some cherry soda.
I want to try that as well."
I shuddered. I could escape giants, countries, and even whole worlds, but it seemed I was never going to get away from Tizer. I had nightmares about all my friends grinning at me with red lips and cherry-tinted teeth. While Sam went below to eat all the food, Mallory lounged at the rudder, keeping an eye on the horizon, though the ship seemed to know where we were going. From time to time, she touched her shoulders where her hair used to fall, then sighed unhappily. I sympathized. Not long ago, Blitz had hacked off my hair to make magic embroidering thread for a bowling bag. I still had traumatic flashbacks.
"Sailing to Norway will take us a few days," Mallory said. "The North Sea can get pretty rough. Unless anybody has a friendly sea god they can call on."
I focused on my date. I wasn't about to call for Njord's help again. I'd seen enough of my granddad's beautiful feet for one eternal lifetime. But I remembered what he had told me. After Jorvik, we were on our own. No divine protection. If Aegir or Ran or their daughters found us, maybe we'll get lucky, I said weakly. Mallory snorted.
"Yep, that happens a lot. Even if we get to Flom safely, what's this business about the Mead having unbeatable guardians?"
I wished I knew. Guardians of the Mead sounded like another book I never wanted to read. I recalled my dream of Odin offering me the whetstone, then his face morphing into something else, a leathery visage with green eyes and rows of teeth. I'd never faced a creature like that in real life, but the cold rage in its gaze had seemed uncomfortably, terrifyingly familiar. I thought about Hearthstone and Blitzen, and where Njord might have sent them to search for a rare stone. An idea began to coalesce, swirling into symmetry like a lump of clay on Alex's wheel. But I didn't like the shape it was taking on. "We'll need the whetstone to defeat the guardians," I said. "I have no idea why. We just have to trust..." Mallory laughed.
"Trust? Right. I've got as much of that as I have luck."
She drew one of her knives. Casually, holding the blade by the tip, she threw the knife at my feet. It impaled the yellow planking and quivered there like a Geiger counter needle.
"Take a look," she offered. "See why I don't trust secret weapons."
I pulled the knife from the deck. I'd never held one of Mallory's weapons before. The blade was surprisingly light. So light, it might get you into trouble. If you handled it like a standard dagger, wielding it with more force than necessary, this was the kind of knife that could leap out of your hand and cut your own face off. The blade was a long, dark isosceles triangle, etched with runes and Celtic knot designs. the handle wrapped in soft, worn leather. I wasn't sure what Mallory wanted me to notice about it, so I just said the obvious. Nice blade.
Eh.
From her belt, Mallory unsheathed its twin.
They aren't as sharp as Jack. They don't do anything magical, as far as I can tell. They were supposed to save my life. But as you can see...
She spread her arms.
I'm dead.
So, you had the knives when you were alive?
For the last 5-6 minutes of my life, yeah.
She twirled the blade between her fingers.
First my mates, they goaded me into setting the bomb.
Hold on. You set the... She cut me off with a harsh look. Like, never interrupt a lady with a knife.
That was Loki, egging me on,
she said.
His voice among my crew. The trickster disguised as one of us. Didn't realize that at the time, of course. Then, after I did the deed, my conscience got the better of me. That's when the old hag appeared.
I waited. I'll admit, I wasn't following Mallory's story very well. I knew she had died disarming a car bomb, but a car bomb she had set herself? Seeing her as somebody who would do that was even harder than seeing her with short hair. I had no idea who I was looking at. She brushed away a tear, as if it were an annoying insect.
The hag says, "Oh, girl, follow your heart." Blah, blah. Nonsense like that. She gives me these knives. Tells me they are indestructible. Can't be dulled. Can't be broken. And she's right about that, far as I can tell. But she also says, you'll need them. Use them well. And I go back to undo what I did. I waste time, trying to figure out how these bloody daggers are supposed to solve my problem. But they don't. And...
She opens her fingertips in a silent explosion. My head buzzed. I had a lot of questions I was afraid to ask. Why had she set that bomb? Who was she trying to blow up? Was she completely insane? She sheathed her knife, then gestured for me to throw her the other. I was afraid I might accidentally toss it overboard or kill her, but she caught it easily.
The hag was also Loki, she said. Had to be. Wasn't enough for him to fool me once. He had to fool me twice and get me killed.
Why did you keep the daggers, then, if they're from Loki? Her eyes glistened.
Because, my friend, when I see him again, I'm going to sheathe these blades right in his throat.
She put the second dagger away, and I exhaled for the first time in several minutes.
Point is, Magnus, she said. I wouldn't put my faith in any magic weapon, knife or otherwise, to solve all our problems. Whether it's Kvasir's mead, or this whetstone that's supposed to get us the mead. In the end, all that counts is us. Whatever Blitzen and Hearthstone are off searching for...
As if their names were an incantation, a wave surged out of nowhere, crashing across the ship's bow. Out of the sea spray stumbled two weary figures. Our elf and dwarf had returned.
Well, well.
Mallory got to her feet, wiping away another tear. She forced some cheerfulness into her tone.
Nice of you boys to drop by.
Blitzen was covered head to toe in anti-sun protection gear. Salt water glittered on his dark trench coat and gloves. Black netting circled the rim of his pith helmet, obscuring his expression until he lifted the veil. His facial muscles twitched. He blinked repeatedly, like someone who had just walked away from a car accident. Hearthstone sat down right where he was. He draped his hands over his knees and shook his head. No, no, no. Somehow, he'd lost his scarf, leaving his outfit as black as hearse upholstery. You're alive, I said, dizzy with relief. My stomach had been knotted up for days worrying about them. Yet now, looking at their shocked expressions, I couldn't savor having them back.
You found what you were looking for, I guessed.
Blitzen swallowed.
I'm afraid so, kid.
Njord was right. We're going to need your help for the hard stuff.
Alfheim. I wanted to say it before he could, just to take the sting out of the word. I hoped I was wrong. I would have preferred a trip to the wildest corner of Jotunheim, the fires of Muspelheim, or even a public bathroom in Boston's South Station.
Yeah, Blitzen agreed.
He glanced at Mallory Keene.
Dear heart, would you let your friends know? We need to borrow Magnus. Hearthstone has to face his father one last time.
Chapter 23. Follow the smell of dead frogs, to the tune of Follow the Yellow Brick Road. What was it about dads? Almost everyone I knew had a garbage father, like they were all competing for the Worst Dad of the Universe award. I was lucky. I'd never met my dad until last winter. Even then, I'd only talked to him for a few minutes. But at least Frey seemed cool. We hugged. He let me keep his talking disco sword and sent me a bright yellow boat in my time of need. Sam had Loki, who put the con in conniving. Alex's dad was an abusive, raging butthat with dreams of global dishware domination. And Hearthstone, he had it worse than any of us. Mr. Alderman had made Hearthstone's childhood a living hellheim. I never wanted to spend another night under that man's roof, and I'd only been there once. I couldn't imagine how Hearthstone would bear it. We fell out of the golden sky, the way one does when tumbling into the airy world of the elves. We landed gently on the street in front of the Alderman mansion. As before, the wide suburban lane stretched out in either direction, hedged with stone walls and carefully tended trees, obscuring the elf millionaires' multi-acre estates from one another. The weak gravity made the ground seem squishy under my feet, as if I could trampoline right back into the stratosphere. I was tempted to try. The sunlight was as harsh as I remembered, making me grateful for the dark glasses Alex had lent me, even if they did have thick pink Buddy Holly frames. There had been much snickering about this aboard the Big Banana. Why we had left Midgard at sunset and arrived in Alfheim during what looked like early afternoon, I wasn't sure. Maybe the elves observed elf light saving time. Alderman's elaborate gates still gleamed with their filigreed A monogram. On either side, the high walls still bristled with spikes and barbed wire to discourage riffraff. But now the security cameras were dark and motionless. The gates were laced shut with a chain and padlock. On either side of the gates, nailed to the brick columns, were matching yellow signs with glaring red letters. Property off-limits by order of Alfheim Police Department. Trespassers will die. Not prosecuted. Not arrested or shot. That simple warning. Step inside these boundaries and you'll die was much more sinister. My gaze wandered over the grounds, which were roughly the size of the Boston Public Garden. Since our last visit, the grass had grown high and wild in the rich Alfheim light. Spiky balls of moss festooned the trees. The pungent smell of scum from the Swan Lake came wafting through the gates. The half-mile driveway was littered with white feathers, possibly from the aforementioned swans. Bones and tufts of fur that might have once been squirrels or raccoons, and a single black dress shoe that looked as if it had been chewed and spit out. At the top of the hill, the once imposing Alderman Manor lay in ruins. The left side of the complex had collapsed in a heap of rubble, girders, and charred beams. Kudzu vines had completely overtaken the right side, growing so heavy that the roof had caved in. Only two picture windows remained intact, their glass panes smoked brown around the edges from the fire. Glinting in the sun,
They reminded me uncomfortably of TJ's sniper glasses. I turned to my friends. Did we do this? I felt more amazement than guilt. The last time we fled Alfheim, we'd been pursued by evil water spirits and elfish police with guns, not to mention Hart's maniacal father. We may have busted a few windows in the process of escaping. I supposed it was possible we'd caused a fire to break out, too. If so, it couldn't have happened to a viler mansion. But still, I didn't understand how the place could have been so thoroughly destroyed, or how quickly such a suburban paradise had turned into this creepy wilderness.
We only started it.
Blitzen's face was again covered by netting, making it impossible to read his expression.
This destruction is the ring's fault.
In the harsh, warm light, it shouldn't have been possible to get a chill. Nevertheless, ice trickled down my back. On our last visit, Harth and I had stolen a hoard of gold from a slimy old dwarf, and Vari, including the little dude's cursed ring. He'd tried to warn us that the ring would only bring misery, but had we listened? No. At the time, we'd been more focused on stuff like, oh, saving Blitzen's life. The only thing that could do that was the Skolfnung stone in Mr. Alderman's possession. His price for it? $1,000,000,000 in gold, because evil fathers don't take American Express. Long story short, Alderman took the cursed ring. He put it on and turned even crazier and eviler, which I hadn't thought possible. Personally, I liked my cursed rings to at least do something cool, like turn you invisible and let you see the Eye of Sauron. And Vari's ring had no upside. It brought out the worst in you. Greed, hate, jealousy. According to Harth, it would eventually change you into a bona fide monster so your outside could be as repulsive as your inside. If the ring was still working its magic on Mr. Alderman, and if it had overtaken him as quickly as the wilderness had overtaken his estate, yeah, that wasn't good. I turned to Harth. Is your dad... is he still in there? Hearthstone's expression was grim and stoic, like a man who had finally accepted a terminal diagnosis. Nearby, he signed. But not himself. You don't mean... I stared at the chewed-up shoe in the drive. I wondered what had happened to its owner. I remembered my dream of large green eyes and rows of teeth. No, that couldn't be what Harth meant. No cursed ring could work so fast, could it? You scouted around inside? I asked.
Afraid so.
Blitz signed as he talked, since Harth could not see his lips moving.
Alderman's whole collection of rare stones and artifacts, gone, along with all the gold. So if the whetstone we're looking for was somewhere in that house...
It has been moved, Hearthstone signed. Part of his hoard. The sign Harth used for hoard was a grasping fist in front of his chin, like he was clutching something valuable. Treasure. Mine. Don't touch, or you'll die. I swallowed a mouthful of sand. And did you find this hoard? I knew my friends were brave, but the idea of them poking around inside the walls of that estate terrified me. Definitely it hadn't been good for the local squirrel population.
We think we found his lair, Blitz said.
Oh, good. My voice sounded higher and softer than usual. Alderman has a lair now. And, did you see him? Hearthstone shook his head.
Only smelled him.
Okay, I said. That's not creepy.
You'll see, Blitz said. It's easiest just to show you.
That was one offer I definitely wanted to refuse, but there was no way I would let Harth and Blitz go through those gates again without me. Why haven't the local elves done something about the estate? I asked.
Last time we were here, they wouldn't even tolerate us loitering. Haven't the neighbors complained?
I waved at the ruins. An eyesore like this, especially if it killed swans, rodents, and the occasional door-to-door sales elf, had to be against the rules of the neighborhood association.
We talked to the authorities, Blitz said. Half the time we've been gone, we've been dealing with elfish bureaucracy.
He shuddered in his heavy coat.
Would it surprise you that the police didn't want to listen to us? We can't prove Alderman is dead or missing. Hearthstone doesn't have any legal rights to the land. As for clearing the property, the best the police would do is put up those stupid warning signs. They aren't going to risk their necks, no matter how much the neighbors complain. Elves pretend to be sophisticated, but they're as superstitious as they are arrogant. Not all elves, of course. Sorry, Hearth.
Hearthstone shrugged. Can't blame the police, he signed. Would you go in there if you didn't have to? He had a point. Just the thought of traipsing through the property, unable to see whatever lurked in the tall grass, made jumping beans hop around in my stomach. The Alfheim police were great at bullying transients out of the neighborhood. Facing an actual threat in the ruins of a madman's mansion? Maybe not so much.
Blitzen sighed. Well, no sense waiting. Let's go find dear old Dad.
I would have preferred another dinner with Aegir's murderous daughters, or a battle to the death with a pile of pottery. Heck, I would have even shared guava juice with a pack of wolves on Uncle Randolph's roof deck. We climbed the gates and picked our way through the tall grass. Mosquitoes and gnats swarmed our faces. The sunlight made my skin prickle, and my pores popped with sweat. I decided Alfheim was a pretty world as long as it was manicured and trimmed and kept up by the servants. Allowed to go wild, it went wild in a big way. I wondered if elves were similar. Calm, delicate, and formal on the outside, but if they let loose? I really did not want to meet the new and unimproved Mr. Alderman. We skirted the ruins of the house, which was fine by me. I remembered too well the blue fur rug in Hearthstone's old room, which we'd been forced to cover with gold to pay the Wargild for his brother's death. I remembered the menu board of infractions on Hearthstone's wall, keeping tally of his never-ending debt to his dad. I didn't want to get near that place again, even if it was in ruins. As we picked our way through the backyard, something crunched under my foot. I looked down. My shoe had gone straight through the rib cage of a small deer skeleton.
Ugh, I said.
Hearthstone frowned at the desiccated remains. Nothing but a few strips of meat and fur clung to the bones. Eaten, he signed, putting his closed fingertips under his mouth. The sign was very similar to hoard, treasure. Sometimes sign language was a little too accurate for my liking. With a silent apology to the poor deer, I freed my foot. I couldn't tell what might have devoured the animal, but I hoped the prey hadn't suffered much. I was surprised wildlife that large was even allowed to exist in the tonier neighborhoods of Alfheim. I wondered if the cops harassed the deer for loitering, maybe cuffing their little hooves and shoving them into the backs of squad cars. We made our way toward the woods at the back of the property. The grounds had become so overgrown I couldn't tell where the lawn stopped and the underbrush began. Gradually, the canopy of trees grew thicker, until the sunlight was reduced to yellow buckshot across the forest floor. I estimated we weren't far from the old well where Hearthstone's brother had died, another place high on my never-visit-again list. So naturally, we stumbled right into it. A cairn of stones covered the spot where the well had been filled in. Not a weed or blade of grass grew in the barren dirt, as if even they didn't want to invade such a poisoned clearing. Still, I had no trouble imagining Hearthstone and Anderon playing here as children. Hearth's back turned as he happily stacked rocks, not hearing his brother scream when the Brunmigi, the beast who lived in the well, rose from the darkness. I started to say, "We don't have to be here." Harth walked to the cairn as if in a trance. Sitting at the top of the pile, where Hearthstone had left it during our last visit, was a runestone. Othala, the rune of family inheritance. Hearthstone had insisted he would never use that rune again. Its meaning had died for him in this place. Even his new set of Rowan runes, the ones he'd received as a gift from the goddess Siv, did not contain Othala. Siv had warned him this would cause him trouble. Eventually, she'd said, he would have to return here to reclaim his missing piece. I hated it when goddesses were right. "Should you take it?" I signed. In a place like this, silent conversation seemed better than using my voice. Hearthstone frowned, his gaze defiant. He made a quick chopping gesture, sideways then down, like he was tracing a backward question mark. "Never." Blitzen sniffed the air. "We're close now. Smell it?" I smelled nothing except the faint scent of rotting plant matter. "What?" "Yeesh," he said aloud. "Human noses are pathetic." "Useless," Hearthstone agreed. He led the way deeper into the forest. We didn't make for the river, as we had last time to find Anvari's gold. This time we moved roughly parallel to the water, picking our way through briars and the gnarled roots of giant oak trees. After another quarter mile, I started to smell what Hearth and Blitz had talked about. I had a flashback to my eighth-grade biology class, when Joey Kelso hid our teacher's frog habitat in the ceiling tiles. It wasn't discovered until a month later, when the glass terrarium crashed back into the classroom and broke all over the teacher's desk, spraying the front row with glass, mold, slime, and rancid amphibian bodies. What I smelled in the forest reminded me of that, except much worse. Hearthstone stopped at the edge of another clearing. He crouched behind a fallen tree and gestured for us to join him. "In there," he signed. "Only place he could have gone." I peered through the gloom. The trees around the clearing had been reduced to charcoal stick figures. The ground was thick with rotting mulch and animal bones. About 50 feet from our hiding place rose an outcropping of boulders, two of the largest rocks leaning together to form what looked like the entrance of a cave. "Now we wait," Blitz whispered as he signed, "for what passes for nighttime in this dwarf-forsaken place." Hearth nodded. "He will emerge at night. Then we see." I was having a hard time breathing, much less thinking, in the miasma of dead frog stench. Staying here sounded like a terrible idea. "Who's going to emerge?" I signed. "Your dad? From there? Why?" Hearthstone looked away. I got the feeling he was trying to be merciful by not answering my questions. "We'll find out," Blitz murmured. "If it's what we fear, well, let's enjoy our ignorance while we still can." Chapter 24. I liked Hearthstone's dad better as a cow-abducting alien. While we waited, Hearthstone provided us with dinner. From his rune bag, he drew this symbol, Gabo. It looked like a regular X to me, but Hearthstone explained it was Gabo, the rune of gifts. In a flash of gold light, a picnic basket appeared, overflowing with fresh bread, grapes, a wheel of cheese, and several bottles of sparkling water. "I like gifts," I said, keeping my voice low. "But won't the smell draw, unwanted attention?" I pointed to the cave entrance.
Doubtful, said Blitzen. The smell coming out of that cave is more powerful than anything in this basket. But just to be safe, let's eat everything quickly.
I like the way you think, I said. Blitzen and I dug in, but Harth merely settled himself behind the fallen tree trunk and watched us.
Not eating?
I asked him. He shook his head. Not hungry, he signed. Also, G-E-B-O makes gifts. Not for the giver. For giver, it must be sacrifice.
Oh. I looked down at the wedge of cheese I'd been about to shove in my mouth.
That doesn't seem fair.
Hearthstone shrugged, then motioned for us to continue.
I didn't like the idea of him sacrificing so we could eat dinner. Just him being back home, waiting for his father to emerge from a cave, seemed like sacrifice enough. He didn't need his very own Ramadan rune. On the other hand, it would have been rude to refuse his gift. So I ate. As the sun sank, the shadows lengthened. I knew from experience that Alfheim never got fully dark. Like Alaska in summer, the sun would just dip to the horizon and pop back up again. Elves were creatures of light, which was proof that light did not equal good. I'd met plenty of elves, Harth accepted, who proved that. The gloom intensified, but not enough for Blitz to take off his anti-sun gear. It must have been 1,000 degrees inside that heavy jacket, but he didn't complain. Once in a while, he pulled a handkerchief from his pocket and dabbed under his netting, wiping the sweat from his neck. Hearthstone fidgeted with something on his wrist, a bracelet of woven blonde hair that I'd never seen before. The color of the locks seemed vaguely familiar. I tapped his hand for attention. Is that from Inga? Harth winced, like this was an awkward subject. On our last visit, Mr. Alderman's long-suffering house servant Inga had helped us a lot. A Huldr, a sort of elf with the tail of a cow. She'd known Harth since they were both kids. As it turned out, she also had a massive crush on him, even kissing him on the cheek and declaring her love before she fled the chaos of Mr. Alderman's last party. We visited her a few days ago, Harth signed. While scouting. She is living with her family now. Blitz sighed in exasperation, which of course Harth couldn't hear. Inga is a good lady, the dwarf signed. But... He made V's with both hands and circled them in front of his forehead, like he was pulling things out of his mind. In this context, I imagined the sign meant something like delusional. Hearthstone frowned. Not fair. She tried to help. Huldr bracelet is good luck. If you say so, Blitz signed. Glad she is safe, I signed. Is the bracelet magic? Harth started to respond. Then his hands froze. He sniffed the air and gestured, down! The birds had stopped chattering in the trees. The whole forest seemed to be holding its breath. We crouched lower, our eyes barely peeking over the top of the fallen tree. On my next inhalation, I got such a snootful of dead frog stench I had to repress a gag. Just inside the cave entrance, twigs and dry leaves crackled under the weight of something huge. The hairs on my neck quivered. I wished I had summoned Jack so I would be ready to fight if needed. But Jack wasn't good in stakeout situations, what with his tendency to glow and sing. Then, from the doorway of the cave came, oh, gods of Asgard. I'd been holding out hope that Alderman had turned into something not so bad. Maybe his cursed form was a Weimaraner puppy, or a Chuckwalla iguana. Of course, deep down I'd known the truth all along. I just hadn't wanted to admit it.
Harth had told me horror stories about what happened to previous thieves who dared to take Anvari's ring. Now I saw that he hadn't been bluffing. Emerging from the cave was a beast so hideous I couldn't comprehend it all at once. First, I focused on the ring glinting on its middle right foretoe, a tiny band of gold biting into the scaly flesh. It must have hurt badly, throbbing like a tourniquet. The end of the toe had blackened and shriveled. The monster's 4 feet were each the diameter of a trash can lid. Its short, thick legs dragged along a lizard-like body, maybe 50 feet from nose to tail, its spine ridged with spikes bigger than my sword. The face I had seen in my dreams, glowing green eyes, a snub-nosed snout with slimy nostrils, a horrible maw with rows of triangular teeth. Its head was maned with green quills. The monster's mouth reminded me of Fenris wolf's, too large and expressive for a beast, its lips too human. Worst of all, tufts of white clung to its forehead, the last remnants of Mr. Alderman's once impressive hair. The new, dragonish alderman pulled himself from his lair, muttering, grinning, snarling, then cackling hysterically, all for no apparent reason.
"No, Mr. Alderman," he hissed. "You mustn't leave, sir."
With a roar of frustration, he belched a column of fire across the forest floor, roasting the trunks of the nearest trees. The heat made my eyebrows crinkle like rice paper. I didn't dare move. I couldn't even look at my friends to see how they were taking this. Now, you may be thinking, "Magnus, you've seen dragons before. What was the big deal?" Okay, sure. I'd seen the occasional dragon. I even fought an elder lindworm once. But I'd never faced a dragon that used to be someone I knew. I'd never seen a person transformed into something so awful, so smelly, so malevolent, and yet so obviously correct. This was Mr. Alderman's true self, his worst qualities given flesh. That terrified me. Not just the knowledge that this creature could broil us alive, but the idea that anyone could have this much monster inside them. I couldn't help but wonder, if I'd put on that ring, if the worst thoughts and failings of Magnus Chase had been given a form, what would have happened to me? The dragon took another step, until only the tip of his tail remained in the cave. I held my breath. If the dragon went out to hunt, maybe we could dash into the cave while he was gone, find the whetstone we needed, and get out of Alfheim without a fight. I could have really gone for an easy win like that. The dragon moaned.
"So thirsty. The river isn't far, Mr. Alderman. Just a quick drink, perhaps."
He chuckled to himself.
"No, no, Mr. Alderman. Your neighbors are tricky. Posers. Wannabes. They'd love for you to leave your treasure unguarded. Everything you have worked so hard for. Your wealth. Yours alone. No, sir. Back you go. Back."
Hissing and spitting, the dragon retreated into his cave, leaving behind only dead frog stench and a few smoldering trees. I still couldn't move. I counted to 50, wanting to see if the dragon would reemerge, but tonight's show seemed to be over. Finally, my muscles began to thaw. I sank back behind our log. My legs shook uncontrollably. I had an overwhelming urge to pee. "Gods," I muttered. "Hearthstone, I..." Words and sign language failed me. How could I commiserate, or even begin to understand what Hearthstone must be feeling? He set his mouth in a hard line. His eyes glinted with steely determination, a look that reminded me too much of his father.
He made an open hand and tapped his thumb to his chest. I'm fine. Sometimes you lie to deceive people. Sometimes you lie because you need the lie to become the truth. I guessed Hearth was doing the latter.
Hey, buddy.
Blitzen whispered as he signed. His voice sounded like it had been crushed under the weight of the dragon.
Magnus and I can figure this out. Let us take the hit.
The idea of Blitzen and me facing that monster alone didn't do much for my bladder problems, but I nodded.
Yeah,
sure. Maybe we can lure the dragon out and sneak in. You're both wrong, Hearthstone signed. We must kill him. And I must help. Chapter 25. We devise a fabulously horrible plan. Worst place for a council of war? How about the collapsed well where Hearthstone's brother had died? In the middle of a creepy forest? In my least favorite of the nine worlds, where we could expect absolutely no backup? Yep, that's where we went. I brought out Jack and filled him in on the situation. For once, he did not squeal with excitement or burst into song. A ring dragon? His runes dimmed to gray. Oh, that's bad. Cursed rings always make the worst dragons. I signed along for Hearth's benefit. Hearthstone grunted. The dragon has a weak spot. The belly. What's he saying? Jack asked. Among Hearthstone's friends, Jack was a stubborn holdout when it came to learning to read ASL. He claimed the gestures didn't make sense to him because he didn't have hands. Personally, I thought it was just payback for Hearth not being able to read Jack's lips, since, you know, Jack didn't have lips. Magic swords can be petty like that. He said the belly is the dragon's weak spot, I repeated. Oh, well, yeah. Jack sounded unenthused. Their hide is almost impossible to cut, but they do have chinks in their belly armor. If you could somehow get the dragon to roll over, and good luck with that, you might be able to stab me through and reach its heart. But even if you could, have you ever pierced a ring dragon's belly? I have. It's gross. Their blood is acid. I translated all that for Hearth. Jack, did the blood damage you? I asked. Of course not. I'm the Sword of Summer. I was forged with a magical finish that resists all wear and tear. Blitzen nodded.
It's true. Jack's got a nice finish.
Thank you, Jack said. Somebody here appreciates good workmanship. Piercing a dragon's belly won't damage me, but I'm thinking about you, Senor. You get one drop of that blood on you while you're cutting the dragon, and you're done. That stuff will eat right through you. Nothing can stop it. I had to admit, that didn't sound fun. Can't you fight on your own, Jack? You could just fly up to the dragon and ask it nicely if it will roll over, Jack snorted, which sounded like a hammer hitting a corrugated metal roof. Ring dragons crawl on their bellies for a reason, guys. They know better than to present their weak spot. Besides, killing a ring dragon is a very personal thing. You would have to wield me yourself. An act like that affects your weird... I frowned. You mean it affects you weirdly? No. You're weird. You're weird, I muttered.
He means fate,
Blitzen put in, signing as he spoke for Hearth's benefit. The sign for fate was one hand pushing forward, like everything was going along just fine, la-di-da. Then both hands suddenly dropping into Blitz's lap like they'd run into a wall and died. I may have mentioned that ASL can be a little too descriptive.
When you kill a ring dragon, Blitz said, especially one who used to be someone you knew, you're messing with serious magic. The dragon's own curse can reverberate through your future, change the course of your destiny. It can...
stain you. He said the word stain like it was worse than ketchup or grease, like dragon killing wouldn't come out of your weird, even with a good pre-soaking. Hearthstone signed in clipped gestures, the way he did when he was irritated. Must be done. I will do it.
Buddy, Blitz shifted uncomfortably. This is your dad.
Not anymore. Hearth, I signed. Some way to get Whetstone without killing the dragon? He shook his head adamantly. Not the point. Dragons can live for centuries. I can't leave him like that. His pale eyes moistened. With a shock, I realized he was crying. It may sound dumb, but elves were usually so in control and subdued about their emotions, it surprised me to know they were capable of tears. Hearth wasn't just angry. He didn't want vengeance. Despite everything Alderman had done to him, Hearthstone didn't want his dad to suffer as a twisted monster. Sieve had warned Hearth that he would have to come back here to reclaim his lost inheritance rune. That meant closing the sad story of his family, putting Mr. Alderman's tortured soul to rest. I get it, I said. I do. But let me strike the killing blow. You shouldn't have that on your conscience, or you're weird or whatever.
Kid's right, Blitz said. It won't stain his destiny as badly. But you, killing your own dad, even if it's a mercy? Nobody should ever have to face a choice like that.
I thought Samira and Alex might disagree. They might welcome the chance to put Loki out of our collective misery. But generally speaking, I knew Blitz was right.
Besides, Jack chimed in, I'm the only blade that can do the job, and I wouldn't let the elf handle me.
I decided not to translate that.
What do you say, Hearthstone? Will you let me do this?
Hearthstone's hands hovered in front of him like he was about to play the air piano. At last, he signed,
Thank you, Magnus.
A gesture like blowing a kiss, then a fist with the thumb under three fingers, M, my name sign. Normally, he wouldn't have bothered with my name. When you talk to somebody in ASL, it's obvious who you are addressing. You just look at them or point. Hearth used my name sign to show respect and love.
I got you, man, I promised.
My insides fluttered at the thought of killing the dragon, but there was no way I'd let Hearthstone take the fall for that act. His weird had already suffered enough, thanks to Mr. Alderman.
So how do we do this? Preferably without acid dissolving me into a pile of Magnus foam?
Hearth gazed at the cairn. His shoulders sagged, as if somebody was piling invisible rocks on top of him.
There is a way. Anderon.
He hesitated at his brother's name sign. You know we used to play around here. There are tunnels made by wild... Here he used a sign I'd never seen before.
He means Nyssa, Blitzen explained. They're like...
He held his hand about 2 feet off the ground.
Little guys. They're also called Hobbs, or Dismá, or Brownies.
I guessed he didn't mean the Girl Scout Junior type of brownie, or the baked chocolate kind.
Hundreds used to live in the woods, Hearth signed, before Dad called Exterminator.
A chunk of bread swelled in my throat. A minute before, I hadn't even known brownies existed. Now I felt sorry for them. I could imagine Mr. Alderman making the call. Hello, Pestaway? There's a civilization in my backyard I'd like exterminated.
So, the brownies' tunnels are still there? I asked.
Hearth nodded.
They are narrow, but you could use one to crawl close to the cave. If we can taunt the dragon to walk over the spot where you are hiding...
I could strike from beneath, I said. Right into its heart. Jack's runes glowed an angry chartreuse.
That's a terrible idea. You'll get showered with dragon's blood.
I wasn't crazy about the idea either. Hiding in a tunnel made by exterminated brownies, while a 5-ton dragon dragged itself overhead, presented all kinds of possibilities for a painful demise. On the other hand, I wasn't going to let Hearthstone down. Getting the whetstone now seemed almost beside the point. I had to help my friend get free of his horrible past once and for all, even if it meant risking an acid bath. "Let's try a dry run," I said. "If we can find a good tunnel, maybe I'll be able to stab the dragon quickly and scramble to the exit before I get splashed."
"Humph."
Jack sounded awfully grumpy. Then again, I was asking him to slay a dragon.
"I suppose that means you'd leave me stuck in the dragon's heart? Once the dragon's dead, I'll come back and get you. Assuming I can figure out how to do that without getting destroyed by acid."
Jack sighed.
"All right. I suppose the idea's worth exploring. Just, if you live through this, you'll have to promise to clean me really well afterward."
Blitzen nodded, as if Jack's priorities made perfect sense to him.
"We'll still need a way to draw the dragon out of his cave," he said, "to make sure he crawls over the right spot."
Hearth rose. He walked to his dead brother's cairn. He stared at it for a long while, as if wishing it would go away. Then, with trembling fingers, he reclaimed the Othala rune. He held it out for us to see. He didn't sign, but his meaning was clear. "Leave that to me." Chapter 26. Things get weird. In Valhalla, we spent a lot of time waiting. We waited for our daily call to battle. We waited for our final glorious deaths at Ragnarok. We waited in line for tacos at the food court, because the Viking afterlife only had one taqueria, and Odin should really do something about that. A lot of Inheriar said waiting was the hardest part of our lives. Normally, I disagreed. I was happy to wait for Ragnarok as long as possible, even if it meant long lines for my Pollo Asada fix. But waiting to fight a dragon? Not my favorite thing. We found a brownie tunnel easily enough. In fact, so many Nissa holes peppered the forest floor, I was surprised I hadn't broken my leg in one already. The tunnel we scouted had an exit in the woods outside the clearing, and another only 30 feet from the cave entrance. It was perfect, except for the fact that the passage was claustrophobic and muddy and smelled of, I am not making this up, baked brownies. I wondered if the exterminator had used a blowtorch to eliminate the poor little guys. Carefully, quietly, we laid branches over the hole nearest the cave. That's where I would hide with my sword ready, waiting for the dragon to crawl over me. Then we did a few dry runs, which weren't very dry in that damp crawl space, so I could practice jabbing upward with my blade and scrambling out of the tunnel. On my third try, as I crawled out gasping and sweaty, Jack announced,
21 seconds! That's worse than last time! You'll be acid soup for sure!"
Blitzen suggested I try it again. He assured me we had time, since ring dragons were nocturnal, but we were operating so close to the dragon's lair, I didn't want to push our luck. Also, I just didn't want to go back into that little hole. We retreated to the cairn, where Hearthstone had been practicing his magic in private. He wouldn't tell us what he'd been doing or what he was planning. I figured the guy had been traumatized enough without me interrogating him. I just hoped his dragon lure worked, and he wasn't going to be the bait. We waited for nightfall, taking turns napping. I couldn't sleep much, and when I did, my dreams were bad. I found myself back on the ship of the dead, though now the deck was strangely empty. In his admiral's uniform, Loki paced back and forth in front of me, tisking as if I'd failed a uniform inspection.
Sloppy, Magnus. Going after that silly whetstone with so little time remaining.
He got in my face. His eyes so close I could see flecks of fire in his irises.